everyone, and welcome to the Writers Co-op.
We are glad that you're here. We are a business podcast for freelance creatives everywhere.
We are your co-hosts. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Wudan.
Hey, Wudan.
Hey, Jenny.
Hey. So when everyone gets this episode, it's going to be mid-July. In July, I'll have a newborn, and you will be on the Pacific Crest Trail when everyone's listening to this.
I'm very excited to be completely unreachable.
I'm with you.
So we're obviously pre-recording this episode before we both head out. So you are kind of hearing a past version of us. But I'm sure we're excited to be doing what we will be doing in July.
Yeah, I think we're super excited. I think we're both ready for these big, like, quote unquote, projects and adventures to start. We've been working towards them for a while. So before we dive in today, we have a sponsor for today's episode. It is our friends at Bump, Inbound, and Ercole. They recently released an online course called the Content Strategy Quick Start. So we wanted to tell you a little bit about that today before we dive in. So the course is not too long. It's just a few hours long, and it is focused on teaching you how to create a B2B content strategy from scratch. So we have done a couple webinars on this. We talk about content strategy sometimes. It's a service you can offer. And this specific e-course is designed to help your clients get more out of their content marketing. So if you're already doing content marketing work, you can actually offer those clients content strategy. And with this course, you can learn how to create that strategy. It's a pretty high price point service as well. So we think that part is pretty cool.
As you know, we're pretty picky about who gets to sponsor us, but this course is pretty aligned with what we teach, and it happens to be perfectly aligned with today's episode as well. So Content Strategy Quick Start features 50 pages of detailed step-by-step guides, 9 instructional videos, and 5 templates covering topics from audience research to SEO to content distribution. Use the code writers-coop, no dash in co-op, to get you $100 off, and we'll remind you about that in our show notes.
Sweet. So, Wudan, what are we talking about today? This is our final new episode for season 5.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, we are talking about transitioning into offering new services in your freelance business.
Sweet. So I love a good episode about changing business models because, as we both know, the only change in freelancing, I think, is the only constant is change, right? Like, things are always changing, at least in my experience in my business. I want to do different things every 7 seconds. So that's what this episode is about. So Wudan, this episode was your idea. Why don't you tell us about the inspiration behind the episode?
It's pretty fair to say that both of us have changed the makeup of our freelance work quite significantly since we started this podcast in early 2020. Back then, I was predominantly doing journalism, focusing on magazine writing and news writing and fact checking. And I've taken a huge swing in the last few months. Less money gets made from writing for news and magazines, let's just put it that way. So things change, and we want to change our services from time to time too, or enter new industries.
Totally. The idea here is that most of us offer, I don't know, when you start your business, like between 1 and 3 services, like, you know, different kinds of writing, different kinds of editing, or maybe you have a certain clientele when you start out in your freelance business. You might call that a niche. If you're listening to this, I believe you are probably offering some kind of writing as one of those services. But over time, at least I know in my case, my brain gets bored. I want something new. Also, like, the market changes, different topics, different niches are more lucrative, so it can make sense to transition the services you offer. So, Wudan, let's do story time. I want to hear about a transition that you're making. I know you're transitioning into podcasting, doing a little bit more focused work in audio. So why did you decide to make that jump? What has it been like?
Yeah, so if you're listening, this is the first episode of the Writers Co-op you've listened to in a while, surprise, I'm doing a lot more podcasting now. And I probably think the last few years have prepared me for this, as I've been working on this and a few other shows as well. And it made me realize that I am really into working on teams. It feels a lot less lonely. It feels good to be able to split things up and delegate in a way that feels more sustainable to me. And I think really big things can happen on teams. A fact-checking gig that I had last season was for a show called This Land. And the season that I checked was nominated for a Webby, an Azmi, and a Peabody. I mean, it's kind of nuts. And this is one of my gripes with doing journalism solo, which is I feel like it's really hard to make that kind of impact or have that kind of reach. So it's a lot, I've seen it to be a lot more possible on a team. And so I'm fact checking other shows and I'm producing another one.
Yeah, it's so awesome about those awards. And I think you're right. It's like multiple people running in the same direction. You can make more of an impact together. And I think this is really going to resonate for a lot of people because, as we know, freelancing can be lonely. It's part of why we started the co-op. So tell me what you've learned so far about adding this new service into your roster. Like, how has it changed your business?
There's definitely quite a bit of money in podcasting right now, more so than traditional print journalism. And it feels like a much more sane way to me to tell important true stories. You know, fact checking in itself gets pretty siloed for magazine pieces, even books. I really don't have to interact with many others on a team, but producing a show, which is a lot more collaborative. So for example, the team I'm working on for the producing project is pretty large. And so in some way, I give up some of my complete freedom as a freelancer to make time for things like group meetings. That's an adjustment. And the end result is also worth it to me. So I'm enjoying just using a different part of my brain all to achieve the same end goal, if that makes sense. So Jenny, what about you? Tell us about when you've added a new service to your lineup.
I feel like the most obvious example of this is probably when I added coaching to my service roster, which happened for the first time 2 years ago. And last October, I really dove into it. But I've talked about that in past episodes. So the example I think I want to share this time around is actually about online coursework.
Yeah, this feels applicable to our listeners as well.
Yeah, totally. So this is another one of those things where there's a lot of money and a lot of focus being spent on online learning. So when I was in graduate school, the long story short is just I got a scholarship for graduate school. I've talked about that in earlier episodes. And my scholarship involved teaching. So I ended up being a graduate assistant. I taught Comm 101 and I taught journalism over the summer to high schoolers. I got really used to teaching, building a curriculum, creating homework, lectures, grading, all that. I really actually loved it. I think when I think about even why I like writing, it's all comes down to me being a teacher. And so I don't explicitly teach anymore, obviously, but I would say that what we do through the Writers Co-op is actually very closely related. We're doing a lot of educating. We are creating homework for you all, essentially, right? If you're a member, we have worksheets, we have webinars, our episodes are like little lectures. All of that is to say that that skill set translates into working on online courses. It's a place where teaching and writing can align. And the online course market is taking off in a big way. I've been doing like a little bit on the side of some e-course writing, mostly coming in as a researcher actually for a few projects over the years, but nothing big. But what I do is there are curriculum designers on these projects and I come in to create content around the structure that they've built. So they build the curriculum, I build the rest of the stuff. The first time I did some e-course writing, it happened through a referral. A friend just like needed a writer on a project and it was well paid. So I was like, sure. Like I said, it was more research than writing, but it was a small project. It was focused on HR training and I was surprised how much I liked it. I thought maybe it would be like really boring to me, but it paid super well too because it was a tech company. So fast forward to now, and I've talked a little bit about this in past episodes, but I just spent a few months building an executive course about artificial intelligence for a company that creates courses for MIT, Cambridge, and beyond. So again, like they needed a longer course edited down. There's already a curriculum. I'm refreshing it, adding new research, writing some narratives, doing some case study work. I also am working on a little team with an instructional designer and a project manager. It's actually like cool work. I've really been surprised how much I've liked it.
It also sounds like a good use of your journalism skills.
For sure. They told me early on that they are like love hiring journalists for this kind of work.
So tell me, what have you learned about translating your journalism skills over into a new service?
Yeah. So first, I would just highlight that journalism skills are really in demand in quote unquote other industries, right? These skill sets in fact checking, researching, writing, those are useful for other industries outside of just pure journalism. So even if I haven't done the exact type of work before, I think I'm learning to be confident in my ability to just like know that I have the skills required to do the job. I think there's also some shifting in schedule, like you said. So there's a different cadence. And then I'm also learning that it takes time to build into a new service area. So as we talk about kind of practically how you do this, it's been a slow transition. Like I said, I did a project on an e-course a couple of years ago, and only now am I seeing that it's something that I want to spend more time on. So whenever I try to push into a new service area, I think I tend to get frustrated because at first it might feel like there's no traction, but it just takes a while to move into a new area. I think this happened to me with editorial consulting too. It just took 3 to 6 months for me to get some traction there with clients. So the practical part of this is like putting it on your website, talking to people about it, telling people I do e-course content means I'm going to get more of that work. But yeah, I think there's a natural flow of things, and trusting that is also really important as you're shifting your business model.
Yeah, I agree on all of this, honestly, that it mostly takes time. So let's get a little practical, Jenny. What kinds of services could journalists or writers offer that are sort of non-traditional, let's say, but very possible?
Yeah, I love when we do this. We just like shout out all the things we can think of. So obviously, podcasting and online learning. Those are the ones we just talked about. I think we can't skip out on mentioning content marketing either.
Yeah, it's a pretty big bucket. And it basically includes creating content that markets something, anything, a business, a product. Usually this work looks like writing for a blog or a magazine associated with a brand. We actually recently just did a webinar about this, so we'll link that into our show notes. It's about how to break into content marketing.
Yep. It's like my work for REI. That would be considered content marketing. That's a new service you can add. I think I would also throw into that bucket, like writing for universities, creating copy for them, writing articles. I even know people who work internally for universities to produce newsletters, help them write up new research. All of those are services that I would say are adjacent to journalism that you are prepared to do if you have some of this writing background. Let's see, what else, Wudan? What are the ones you can think of?
I think if you take research as a skill and then extend that, I've heard about journalists working as researchers for policy organizations, helping private investigators with cases, things like that.
Yeah, the private investigator stuff is really cool. I've also heard of that. I think coaching, teaching, and mentorship belong in here somewhere. Like if you've been doing this work for a while and you want to teach other people in some way, that is a possibility. Our work as interviewers, as journalists, actually makes us pretty prepared to coach, I think. So that is an interesting one. And then I also feel like there's just this like big bucket of like writing thought leadership, journalism thought leadership, freelancing thought leadership, which I know we have thoughts about, Wudan. But by that, I mean like, you know, ebooks, blogs, podcasts. If you are an established writer, that is a service you could offer to other writers.
We've also seen people transition into offering public relations consulting as well. So basically teaching PR folks how to work with journalists, which I would say is sorely needed.
Yeah, that's a good one. My inbox thanks the people who do that kind of work because then I get fewer pitches that are misaligned and terrible. Content strategy also in here. Like we mentioned, our sponsor for this episode does an online course about how to develop content strategy, and we just did a webinar about it. So again, we'll link to that in the show notes. Basically, content strategy is creating a strategic content plan for an organization, maybe an editorial plan that doesn't have one. I often go in and build workflows for new startups. They just like don't even know which way is up when it comes to creating content. So I'll help them build a framework for that. They want to streamline their information. I help with that. That is another service as well. It's called a number of different things, content strategy, content consulting. But you could add that into your mix if you wanted to.
Yeah, others can move from writing into editing or writing into producing like I'm doing, or writing into writing screenplays for Hollywood. I'm really just shooting the shit right now.
Yeah, project management. If you've been like a managing editor, you can go do project management for other companies. Maybe adding videography, photography. I have a client who's adding photography into her mix because she's been doing it on the side. Now she wants to offer it as a service. So yeah, there's so many of these.
The list is massive. And I think the most practical question most people are asking us right now, if you're listening, is how? How do you get started?
Yeah, let's break that down into some steps. So, Wudan, using your most recent experience, what would you say the steps looked like between thinking, I would like to do more work in audio, and actually making that happen?
This might be a counterintuitive answer, but I looked at my network. who I already knew and what applicable work I'd already done. So as I was making the transition into podcasting, the main thing that worked in my favor was that I had already worked on a few podcasts and shows, and that world is pretty small. So people who have been on my teams ended up recommending me for other shows or bring me on to work on more of their shows. And so once I'm part of a team, everyone else gets into my network as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that tracks for me too. Like basically first you need to pick a new service line to invest in. So like for you, right, you're like audio, I want to do more podcasting. For a lot of people, then the follow-up to that is research and informational interviewing. So starting with people you already know. I always think we create this sort of like daunting picture of like, I have to go out and do something new, but like start where you're at. There are probably a few people who could talk to you about what you want to do, especially because a lot of times we're transitioning into adjacent services, not just like completely new things. So when I'm coaching people who want to add a new service, I would say step one is brainstorm all the possibilities. Not editing, not judging, just literally like brain dump every option you could do based on your past experience. And then you're going to like pick one. So I guess with that, Wudan, how did you know that podcasting and production and fact checking was the right option? I'm putting right into air quotes there.
I honestly started feeling so burnt out by print media. I mean, anyone who works in this industry knows it's a never ending cycle of pitching, getting ghosted, taking a few weeks to follow up, taking forever to negotiate the worst media contracts, and then scrambling to interview and write before a deadline. It made me want more. And I think another part of that is that I've been freelancing for so long as a narrative journalist that it kind of makes sense that I might feel a little bored, for lack of a better term, by reporting for print, and that it was time for me to learn something new.
Yep. I think there's also something to picking the path of least resistance. I know that might sound weird, but like choosing to move into an adjacent field where you might already know a few people, you might already have some proof of work. Maybe you did one project 6 months ago, like I said with the e-course thing, and I liked it, and you decide you want to lean into that more heavily. Like it feels right for you, Wudan, like it was sort of like a parallel jump instead of just like a throw everything out and start over again. So tell me what was next in your process, Wudan. So you like talked to some people, you figured out you wanted to do audio. What happened after that?
I had a bunch of calls with discovery calls, see our previous episode, with production networks to learn about what they were looking for. I tried pitching them shows, but those pitches more or less led to a greater conversation of what I can bring to them for shows that they already have on the table. And I would describe these conversations as pretty symbiotic, and they helped me be top of mind, especially when executive producers at these networks are building teams, which is something that they do a lot of. Sometimes it just helps for them to meet others so that they can help staff all these other shows that they already have in the queue.
Yeah, I think this is big because a lot of times we try to edge into a new industry and we don't necessarily edge in exactly the way that people need, but even just meeting people helps, right? This has happened to me a number of times. Like, I remember at one point I decided I wanted to offer podcast transcription services, but that wasn't really the right need, but having those conversations was really helpful. So I would highlight that next step. It's talk about the fact that you offer this service, right? Have those conversations, put yourself on people's lists. I get a lot of people in coaching who want to offer fact checking, and it's like, your website does not say that you offer fact checking. If you tell someone you offer fact checking, they look at your website for evidence, they could be like, I don't think this person offers fact checking. So, you know, you gotta list that you do that work on your website, put the service up, and then add yourself to some of those rosters for certain publications, just like you did, Wudan, so that you could be top of mind for people. Like, this stuff doesn't just appear when you're moving into a new service area. You usually have to say out loud that you want it.
Yeah, I think this is where people feel like it's so woo-woo because asking for that feels like manifesting. Except it's not. Getting your name on somebody's roster is an extremely tangible thing. And when you tell people you offer a service, it's very likely that they will often ask you to do that service for them later on.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you're taking action by saying these things out loud, right? It's not just manifestation in the fluffy way that people use that term. So I'd say the other part of this in a discovery call, and we talked about this in our last new episode, It's just about knowing how much your experience in one sector can translate into another sector and be very clear on how you have that conversation. So I would talk that through with someone or journal on it or write it down or something before you have that discovery call, because you really want to be aware of which practical skills you have from your previous work that would apply to this new service. For me, for example, if I'm talking with someone about e-course work, and maybe this involves giving them a resume, maybe not, I'm talking about my training as a journalist, but I'm also talking about the years I spent teaching, and I can give examples of how we use TWC right now to teach people. I'm just like very aware of what my skill set is, and again, it's kind of like a job interview, right? So, Wudan, which of your skills in journalism came in the most handy for podcasting?
Yeah, I would say some skills transfer, but the beauty of doing podcasts for me is that I get to learn something. So as a producer, my tasks revolve around setting up interviews, strategizing around how to approach certain people for interviews, and research.
I love it. Yeah, I think we're not going to talk anymore about discovery calls here because we just did for a full episode. I'll link to that in the show notes. But that is a really key part of just having this conversation, selling your expertise, selling your ability to be adaptable too and learn things, right? And then the final step here is to start small, I think, in the new service area, but to like build toward it in a methodical way.
Yeah, people forget that it only takes one project to help you get experience. And then with that one project, you can feel more confident pitching that experience and expertise to other new clients. Each project builds your experience and expertise. Every single one.
Yeah.
You don't need 10. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a snowball effect, right? I think people are always like, how do I get started? It's like, by getting started, by doing one small thing. The biggest thing we want to pinpoint here, I think, in this episode is really that you're not trapped. If you offer writing as a service, like there are actually many, many possibilities, many ways to use your skill set. That is the beauty of freelancing. I think you will always be transitioning in some way. So when you feel the itch to do something new, lean into it, give it the time and space that it deserves, do some research, take on a small project in that area, see if you like it. It's all experimental.
I'd say that most established businesses, and not just freelancing and writing and creative stuff, but established businesses generally don't just offer the same service year after year. They're looking for ways to grow or improve. And to me, that's what I get from transitioning into a new service area as a freelance business owner. I enjoy growth.
Yeah. And I think it's like part of, you know, when we talk about career building, like this is a big part of it, right? So Patreon, all access members and above are going to get a worksheet for this episode. So if you're not a member, you can always join us. That worksheet is going to walk you through the steps that I talked about that I work with clients all the time on establishing a new service area. So brainstorming, figuring out how to use your past skills, and making a little game plan for how to edge into a new area. And like I said, if you're not a Patreon member, you can always join us. Links in the show notes for joining the co-op community.
We offer coaching, a Slack community, drop-in office hours, discounts on events and worksheets, early access to episodes, and so much more.
Yeah, it's a good place to hang out. Lots of support.
And remember, if you haven't reviewed the Writers Co-op yet, but listened to all 5 seasons, please rate and review our show. It helps other freelancers find us.
And thanks to Bump Inbound and Ercole for their support of today's episode. That is it for now. We are going to be taking a few months away from the mic after this, but we will be back this fall with more.
All right. Happy summer. Bye, Jenny.
Bye, Wudan. Season 5 of the Writers Co-op is made possible by you, our listeners. Thank you. The season's co-hosts are me, Jenny Gritters, and Wudan Yan. Our producer is Jen Monnier, and our editor is Susan Vallett.